science and scientists, deeply worried about these humanists who so often contradicted the clear word of Scripture. Even Grant's father urged his son to steer clear of biology and any other scientific specialty that would bring the frowning scrutiny of new morality investigators upon them. For Grant, there was no problem. Since he'd been old enough to look into the night sky with awe and wonder, he'd wanted to be an astronomer. In high school, where he was by far the brightest student in his class, he narrowed his interest to the astrophysics of black holes. Although Grant thrilled to the discoveries on Mars and out among the distant moons of Jupiter, it was the death throes of giant stars that truly fascinated him. If he could learn how collapsed stars warped space-time, he might one day discover a way for humans to use such warps for interstellar journeys. He longed to work at the Farside Observatory on the moon, studying collapsed stars far out in the cold and dark of deep interstellar space. Yet Grant had been warned that even at Farside there were tensions and outright dangers. Despite all the strictures of the new morality and the stern rules laid down by the observatory's directors, some astronomers still tried to sneak time on the big telescopes to search for signs of extraterrestrial intelligence. When such prohibited activities were discovered, those responsible were inevitably sent back to Earth in disgrace, their careers blighted. That did not bother Grant, however. He intended to keep his nose clean, to avoid antagonizing the ever-present agents of the new morality, and to study the enigmatic and entirely safe black holes. He was careful never to use the dreaded word evolution when speaking about the life cycles of stars and their final collapse into black holes. Evolution was a dangerous word among the new morality eavesdroppers. By the time he was finishing high school, he had grown into a quiet, square-shouldered young man with a thick thatch of sandy blonde hair that often tumbled over his light brown eyes. He was good-natured and polite. The high school girls considered him a delta in their merciless rating system. Okay as a friend, especially when it came to help with schoolwork, but too dull to date except in an emergency. A shade under 6 feet tall and whipcord lean, Grant played on the school's baseball and track teams. No outstanding star, but the kind of reliable performer that made his coaches sleep better at night. As his senior year approached, Grant was offered a full scholarship in return for a 4-year commitment to public service. The service was inescapable. Every high school graduate was required to do at least 2 years, and then another 2 at age 50. The new morality advisor in his high school told Grant that by accepting a 4-year term now, he could get a full scholarship to the university of his choice, with the understanding that his public service would be in the field for which he was trained, astrophysics. Grant accepted the scholarship and the commitment, his eyes still on Farside. He went to Harvard, and much to his delighted surprise, fell in love with a raven-haired biochemist named Marjorie Gold. She made him feel important for the first time in his life. When he was with her, the quiet, steady, sandy-haired young astronomy student felt he could conquer the universe. They married during their senior year, even though he knew he'd be off to the Farside Observatory for 4 years while Marjorie would be doing her public service with the International Peacekeeping Force, tracking down clandestine biological warfare factories in the jungles of Southeast Asia and Latin America. But they were young, and their love could not wait. So they married, despite their parents' misgivings. "I'll come down from Farside at least every few months," Grant told her as they lay together in bed, contemplating the next 4 years. "I'll get leave when you're here," Marjorie agreed. "By the time I'm finished with my 4 years, I'll have my doctorate," he said. "Then you can get on a tenure track at any university you like. And after the 4 years is over, we can apply to have a child," Grant said. "A boy," said Marjorie. "Don't you want a daughter?" "Afterward, after I learn how to be a mother, then we can have a daughter." He smiled in the darkness of their bedroom and kissed her, and they made love. It was a safe time of Marjorie's cycle. They both graduated with high honors. Grant was actually first in his class. Marjorie received her public service commission with the peacekeepers, as expected. Grant, though, was shocked when his orders sent him not to the Farside Observatory on the moon, but to research station Thomas Gold in orbit around Jupiter, more than 700 million kilometers from Marjorie at its closest approach to Earth. Which side you're on? Grant's father counseled patience. If that's where they want to send you, they must have their reasons. You'll simply have to accept it, son. Grant found that he could not accept it. There was no patience in him despite earnest prayers. His father had been a meek and accepting man all his life, and what had it gotten him? Obscurity, genteel poverty, and condescending smiles behind his back. That's not for me, Grant told himself. Despite his father's conciliatory advice, Grant fought his assignment all the way up to the regional director of the New Morality's Northeast office. I can't spend 4 years at Jupiter, he insisted. I'm a married man. I can't be that far away for 4 years. Besides, I'm an astrophysicist, and there's no need for my specialty at Jupiter. I'll be wasting 4 years. How can I work on my doctorate when there's no astrophysics being done there? The regional director sat behind a massive oak desk strewn with papers, tensely upright in his high-backed chair, his lean, long-fingered hands steepled before him as Grant babbled on. His name was Ellis Beach. He was a serious-looking African-American with dark skin the color of sooty smoke. His face was thin, long with a pointed chin. His eyes were tawny, somber, focused intently on Grant without wavering all through his urgent, pleading tirade. At last, Grant ran out of words. He didn't know what more he could say. He had tried to control his anger, but he was certain he had raised his voice unconscionably and betrayed the resentment and aggravation he felt. Never show anger, his father had counseled him. Be calm. Be reasonable. Anger begets anger. You want to sway the regional director to your point of view, not antagonize him. Grant slumped back in his chair, waiting for some reaction from the regional director. The man didn't look antagonized. To Grant's eyes, he didn't look as if he'd heard half of what Grant had said. Beach's desk was cluttered with paper from flimsy single sheets to thick volumes bound in red covers. His computer screen flickered annoyingly. He was obviously a very important and very busy person, yet his phone had not beeped once since Grant had been ushered into the warmly paneled, carpeted office. I was supposed to go to Farside, Grant muttered, trying to get some response out of the brooding man behind the desk. I'm fully aware of that, Beach said at last. Then he added, but unfortunately, you are needed at Jupiter. How could I be needed? Let me explain the situation to you, young man. Grant nodded. The scientists have had their research station in Jupiter orbit for nearly 20 years, Beach said, stressing the word scientists ever so slightly. They have been poking around with the life forms that exist on two of the planet's moons. Three, Grant corrected without thinking. Plus, they've found life forms in Jupiter's atmosphere as well. Beach continued, unfazed. The work these scientists do is enormously expensive. They are spending money that could be much better used to help the poor and disadvantaged here on Earth. Before Grant could respond, Beach raised a silencing hand. Yet we of the New Morality do not object to their work, even though many of those scientists are doing everything they can to try to disprove the truth of Scripture, we allow them to continue their godless pursuits. Grant didn't think that studying the highly adapted algae and microbes living in the ice-covered seas of the Jovian moons was a godless pursuit. How could any attempt to understand the fullness of God's creation be considered godless? Why do we not object to this enormously expensive waste of funds and effort? Beach asked rhetorically. Because we of the New Morality and similar God-fearing organizations and other nations have seen fit to establish a compromise with the International Astronautical Authority and the global financial power structure as well, I might add. Compromise? Grant wondered aloud. Fusion, said Beach. Thermonuclear fusion. The world's economic well-being depends on fusion power plants. Without the energy from fusion,